Hello and welcome to the Recursive Podcast. Our next guest is a born entrepreneur. At 23, he already had three profitable companies. Andrea Rusacci is a serial entrepreneur currently serving as the CEO of Styler, an online booking platform for the beauty industry. An opportunity Andrea saw and acted on in the midst of the pandemic. He utilizes his background in digital marketing and psychology to build fast scaling companies. Andrea Rusacci, welcome to the Recursive Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's a very interesting conversation that we're having right in the start of the day over a cup of coffee about being dressed properly, having the beards and the haircuts done properly. And this is actually your business, so you're representing it in a very nice way.
Yeah, thanks. I do my best.
So I'll start off with this one. You're a born entrepreneur. A lot of people probably don't know the fact that in high school you already had a business. So what sparked your entrepreneurial drive, Andre?
I guess it was the lack of the presence of my parents. When I was young, they had to work, so I would spend a lot of time by myself, and later on they were abroad working in Germany. And I was kind of by myself, and with lots of free time, you kind of learn to entertain yourself and to solve problems and to like Google to learn how to solve certain problems. And I guess this was my foundation as an entrepreneur, you know, like a solo thinker. And the constant need to research topics and find solutions. I think this makes you an entrepreneur, because that's what you basically do. You kind of solve different kinds of problems all day long.
I love the way that you bored yourself into success in this way, when looking for things that keep you interested, keep you passionate. And the word is curiosity, isn't it?
Yeah.
What kind of mindset do you need to have to perceive success as opportunity? Because when you're a kid, you don't think about success. You just do things that you enjoy. So do you think that what you've been through inspired this self-belief? Yeah, I can find solutions, so I can build businesses.
So what happened actually when I was around 16 or 15, I realized that my parents are not with me because they have to work abroad to make money. So I figured out money is the problem. So I Googled how to make money, and I found an article that was saying making money is art that you can learn, and the way you learn to ride a bicycle, this way you can also learn to make money. And I was actually, I taught myself to ride a bicycle. So I said, oh, okay, I'm going to learn how to make money. So that's when I took the decision kind of to become an entrepreneur, even though I wasn't aware that's connected to that. I wanted to make money, and this is how it started.
What kind of high school were you going through? What was your environment like?
Back then I was doing math with bilingual math and informatics at one of the colleges in mm-hmm. my area.
Were you standalone, like entrepreneurial, or you had other friends that were interested?
What happened later on, so I started doing commerce, basically buying and selling online, just putting on better pictures and better description and selling the same stuff that was already there. Basically buying it for like €5 and selling it for 15. But at my age, you know, getting money at home, I saw people starting to react like, wow, he's making money, and like looking a bit cautious, like what's he doing, not to do something illegal and stuff like that. But I saw that kind of the people around me mattered more, that I was making money than the grades in school. So somehow it was easier to, I was at a high profile college, so high school, and it was kind of easier to make money than to get high grades. So I kind of went on, and this thing developed over the years.
Awesome. And at 23, you already had three companies.
How come? So I had my first company with 18. I started with advertising. We were not really knowing what we are doing and understanding properly, but by 23 I already had several companies. We are making money, and since we tackled the online world, there was not so much competition, so you could be bad or average and you would still be successful just because we were there and there were almost no competition in those early days. So we went on from advertising. We kind of learned how to advertise better and better by using clients' budgets. And later on, I kind of got pissed because clients were not understanding the game, but they were like giving directives. So I said, no, these people are stupid. I'm just going to make my own businesses and put in practice what I learned in advertising. So I went to do e-commerce, and later on staffing and recruiting. I figured that I kind of can sell humans, you know, like workers. It was easier than e-commerce. We were getting a lot of money, like 4,000 or 5,000 euros per person. So we were just running ads with the offer they had. It was 100x better offer than what they were earning in Romania. So it was really easy to get the people interested and like send over the CVs and make a lot of money doing that.
Awesome. I love this. What am I good at, and what do I think is better? And this like confidence that you can make it. There's something that I'm very interested in because I recently started going through pre-accelerators and building my own startup idea. A lot of people trying to get into entrepreneurship, they fall in love in their ideas, and as because you've been through different things. Do you get attached to ideas, and how do you separate the ideas, like good ideas that are actionable and can end up in a good result, to others that are simply just good ideas but nothing more than?
I guess it comes with experience. Where I'm at, I would say I'm looking from very many perspectives when I start a business. Like, I'm looking, okay, what's the opportunity? What's the competition? What's the market size? What's my competitive advantage? Can I become the market leader or not? Else I wouldn't start it, you know, like, I don't want to go and compete with big guys. I want to go in a field where I'm sure I can become the best. That's how my mentality works. And there's plenty of opportunities around us, so I just want to go where I can win. For me, winning is becoming the market leader.
This is like Blue Ocean Strategy.
Kind of.
Awesome. It's a great book, so I love this idea that you can, if you separate yourself from the pack, you can create a blue ocean within the red ocean, so it's a great idea. You have a trained eye also for market trends. It seems that you saw that there is a gap in the advertising online business in Romania. Now, at the peak of the pandemic, you're starting a business that's, people will say, why? It's a peak of the pandemic, you don't do anything at that time. So how do you stay at the top of your game?
Well, why I started Styler at the peak of the pandemic, it was because I almost lost all my businesses because of the pandemic. And this was bad because I was making a lot of passive income. But on the other end, it was an opportunity. So I said, okay, I had like 2-3 years 3 years that I was kind of off. I traveled around the world and I discovered myself and like invested in myself. I didn't need to make money because I had the passive income. So when the pandemic came, the businesses were affected. I have some cash on the side. So I say, okay, I always read that in books that when something disruptive happens and you can start fresh, then aim big, do something big. So I said, okay, I need a big business so that I can focus all my energy on it, so that I don't need to create several other businesses beside. So I researched the market and I saw this opportunity on the consumer side, that nobody was bidding for clients, but everybody want clients. So I said, okay, I'm gonna create this marketplace where I gather all the clients, and I'm gonna become a force here, because everyone wants clients and they will align to my will if I give them clients. So this is how it started, and this is how I guess I managed to stay up in this game, is recognizing the right pattern, like what people do, what people want. It's that you need to recognize, and can you offer them that? Like, what do you need to do to get the jackpot out of the market? And for us, it was spending 1.3 million euros on marketing to get to this point where we can dispatch 30,000 clients a month to the saloons, to our partnering saloons.
Yeah, it's having such marketplaces is very hard and heavy on the marketing budget, so people know about you. That's great. So one thing that stands out in other entrepreneur stories, of course, is their business failures. Would you remember or just say a couple of words about a business failure that taught you something very, very important?
Well, I had lots of them. So the last one was with Styler, when we took a bad decision together with our advisors, and when shit happened, it was my fault. I had to repair the thing. So I guess we learn every day. So. And we keep learning, and based on what we learn, we become a new person. It's very different from, I would say, it's different from business to business, the tips and tricks you can get. But if I would say, if I would highlight something that would be a good message for everybody out there, it will be follow your intuition. Try to find that spot, that thought in your mind that represents your intuition, and follow that. Or follow your heart, some say. That's the proper way to do things. And that's a general advice you can give to large communities that will be correct, to put it like this. So I just want to highlight this.
Intuition is important, but sometimes there are like number of mistakes coming after you make a bold move, or just not the outcome that you want. So how do you like suck it up and man up and continue going through?
Well, that's the tough part that makes you a successful person. You know, like I have weeks when like 3, 4, 5 negative answers come, and like I feel like shit, I don't go to the office, because if my people see me like this, they like freak out. So I have days where I just skip office and work remotely from somewhere just to recover myself. And it happens often, you know, like with every experiment we do experiments on a weekly basis. And with every experiment we do, we are either excited about the result or sad about it. Perseverance is a good quality to have. Also, I learned that getting up too fast after you are knocked down might be a big mistake. So sometimes it's good to stay a bit down and like reevaluate and see what would be the best solution to the problem. And what I find that it helps is like sleeping on that idea a night or two, you know, like sometimes you just wake up with a new perspective, with a new solution. So I tend to base a lot of my decisions on intuition and how I feel inside of me when I think about a certain problem or a certain solution.
I love this Einstein concept. I always do it for hard decisions in my life too. Mm-hmm. Just let's sleep over this and decide in the morning.
And it's such an adult way of treating problems, you know, because the child inside us wants the problem fixed now so that I can relax. But I guess business teaches you to kind of stay anxious and with this kind of uncertainty inside of you for sometimes like weeks or months, you know, like when we talk about burn rates and founding startups usually don't have money in their account for more than 2-3 months, sometimes for days. We've been days away from not being able to pay the wages several times so far. So it's a very intense game where you kind of go to sleep sometimes and you're like, okay, where am I going to get the money from?
No. So one of the things that is quite obvious in your path is that you have pivoted many ways. In many ways through different endeavors. Can you walk us through a way to finding the right focus or finding, okay, I'll try this and then, but what is the, like, this doesn't work? What's the precisely the one thing that we're aiming at?
Well, depending on where you are, I guess your priorities are different, but as an overall concept, the most important thing in business is either how fast you are growing or how much money you are making, depending on the stage you are. Pivoting helped me a lot to get from, because there are stages where you are in between. So on the first part of our journey, we start, we focused a lot on velocity. We managed to get 100 marketplace bookings a day after 6 months from our launch. That was impressive to my investors. They never saw something like that. But 1 year forward, nobody cared about velocity anymore. The war started, so everybody was like, how much money are you making? And we were not making a lot of money, and we had to pivot our business model, and we did, and now we are making a lot of money. But it was the in-between phase where we had to pivot, and not just our business model, but also our focus. So first you pivot your focus, and then you find the solution to what needs to be done to get there.
I love this.
I guess just measure what matters. It's at every stage, it's important to keep in mind that.
I love the adaptiveness of entrepreneurs and like, okay, right now the most important thing is this, but in 5 weeks it might be something else,
yeah,
depending on the stages.
And so, like, if we would have done it different, it would not have worked. We started off by giving clients to salons for €1. So it was very easy to onboard them. It's a good value proposition. And later on, we had over 1,000 salons, and we needed to make money. And the €1 was not working because some salons were fighting against us and saying, "Okay, next time call me or text me. Don't book over Styler because they didn't want to give me €1." So we pivoted to taking 35% from the first order. If they come back to the salons, it's free. So now they no longer fight us, but would I have started with 35%? It would not have worked, and I would not get to the critical mass I needed to start advertising on consumer. So I guess pivoting is a core activity of every entrepreneur. You have to see when you switch the tactics.
Awesome. How do you, we were discussing this in the conversation before we started the podcast, and we were discussing this disruption, very like fancy word nowadays. So how did you find out that this particular industry, the beauty industry, is ripe for disruption and digitalization?
So we were looking to create the next Uber. Like, okay, what's, we knew that we have a lot of advertising experience. We know how to get consumers to use a service. So we thought, okay, what should we do? And we looked at several industries. But what we saw here specifically was that nobody was kind of advertising. There was no Google Ads. There were no Facebook Ads. SEO was a complete blue ocean. We looked at the competitors in the market. They were approaching this business from the business side, so nobody was really advertising on consumers. And we saw the opportunity there because of the marketing background. That's what we saw. That's why we tackled this. We saw the recurrence of this service. We saw the need. The timing was good. Salons did not have clients. Why would you use that? Because it was pandemic, a complete lockdown, you know? So, yeah, we knew that the idea was good. It was a blue ocean. The timing was good. And we just started.
Awesome. So you briefly described how the business model moved from 1 euro per client to 35% off of the first order. Are there any other ways to like help this industry retain their customers and their clients? That you're, is it, there is there, let's rephrase. Is there another service or feature that you're giving as a bonus to the salons?
Yeah, well, what we do is we give the technology for digitalization for free. So where our competitors charge money, we give the technology for free and they can use it for free to put their appointments in. And we detect the free slots and list them to consumers as available. So this is how it works. Of course, this helps them make a lot more money because they get a lot of customers from us and they're happy to work with us. But we plan to, actually what we see here now is the foundation of a market network that tends to integrate a social media aspect where professionalists and the customer can communicate with each other in a 360 degree pattern. So they can engage, become friends, share content. That's our idea. Awesome. And we are working towards that.
This is perfect content marketing strategy.
Yes.
Get a satisfied customer to produce the content for you.
I believe Brilliant. That next 10 years will be all about market networks, where every industry will get one and they will chat and engage among each other in niched market networks.
Sounds amazing. All right. How did you decide that it's the right time to expand? Let's put it into perspective. In the peak of the pandemic, you start this marketplace. We are now 2 years, 2.5 years in, and you have already decided and you've grown 2 million euro?
Raised 2 million euro.
The company is evaluated around 15 million. So how do you decide that it's time to go abroad, to go big, go global?
Well, a funny story there. Actually, we went abroad and then we came back. War started. We noticed that investment funds are more cautious, are not that eager to invest. So we had to pull back from Hungary. We have offices there and we had 3 employees, but we pulled back. And now we are going to raise a seed round and go back there again. But actually, when you try something out, and people see it and it works well, they all say, wow, genius. But actually, we had to pull back. It was not a good decision to go out yet. We are still burning money on the local market. We have around 25,000 burn rate between what we are producing and what we need every month. So I guess you kind of, you never know what tomorrow brings, right? So I guess adaptability is should be the core of every good entrepreneur. What is today a good decision might be tomorrow bad. You never know what twist life brings.
Yeah, I have a favorite saying here that fits very well in our conversation. Saying yes to something good is saying no to something great. So might be this opportunity to go into Hungary now is not a good time, but in 6 months, it might be the perfect timing to be there.
Actually, so. I was working on 2 markets simultaneously, on Istanbul and Budapest. Budapest is a bit more advanced, but I went from that to just focus on Romanian market for the moment. And it's been like 6 months till there, and we are not there yet. We'll need to raise a seed round to expand there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So at some point, the speed I was thinking in changed dramatically.
What differentiates, because you started off with the business model canvas and like what's my competitive advantage, what differentiates Tyler from your international competitors?
Well, from the international ones, I will say their core business is a SaaS-enabled marketplace. Mm-hmm. We want to create a market network which has in the middle of it a social media platform. So that's the core differentiator there.
Okay. This is what you've mentioned previously and yes, you believe it's happening.
And like, it's fucked up to say, but a lot of investors there don't get it. So like, yesterday took the decision to only speak with those that have previous marketplaces experience, and they kind of, nobody said, oh, I heard about market networks yet from all of those I've spoken with, you know. So it's challenging, but yeah, we'll keep going and trying, and the opportunity is very good because we have a lot of traffic from SEO. The content actually gets indexed and generates massive amounts of traffic. So that
for
sustains
free.
For free. This sustains the growth of a social media network, you know. But they tend to just look, oh, how much money are you making? How many salons? How many appointments? Oh, and this social media thing, you have to prove it first, then I'll put money on it.
Yeah, I totally understand you because I'm in the same boat. Producing a podcast is also making nonstop content, which makes SEO so much easier. Mm-hmm. Because it's unique. It gives you an advantage to stand out without even placing any budgets in the SEO optimization. So just a quick moment to elaborate here on the market networks. Market networks are like social medias, but also with the opportunity to something like Facebook try to do with a marketplace, but...
So they have three components.
Yeah.
A SaaS,
yeah.
Which we have and give away for free to the professionals.
Yeah.
A marketplace where consumers book appointments to the professionals, and a social media network where they can engage, become friends, all professionals consider themselves artists. They want their work to be appreciated. They have, they want to have followers. They want to sell products. Basically what I'm trying to do would be a LinkedIn just for the beauty industry with specific purpose tuned to the industry professional which has special needs. Where we want to go.
With included button on every post, like book an appointment with me today.
Not just that. We want to include events, products, recruiting. So... when I think of the social media, I have these three, four pillars, like, okay, new customers, products, which they can sell to customers, recruiting, because most of the salons have problem recruiting, and events. You know, we want to be in the center of it. So I thought about it and I find these four elements as a core to what we need to achieve to become a market leader.
I wish you do that very soon, and I love people that think about the game and the business in the long run. Let's talk about your leadership values. You've been years self-made, as you said. What do you think that your strongest qualities as a leader are?
I guess knowing myself, knowing integrity, doing what I'm saying, being how I believe to be is the core. Because if we just take some values and put it in the company rules and pitch it to the people, but we don't align to it, this bullshit, people will see it, you know. People don't believe in it if you are not following the rules. So that's, I would say, the core, because even if you have good intentions, if you're not aware of yourself, and it's a really hard thing to do to become aware of yourself.
Yeah.
Takes thousands of hours of reflections, introspections, meditation to really get to know yourself. This would be the first element. And the second element would be assuring people that they are in my boat, assuring them that if I win, they win, knowing that when I win, how they win, you know, what's their part, how much are they going to take, what are the benefits. So when success happens, everybody celebrates. I find this to be very motivating for people, and it's a very good leadership skill to have. So this gets people involved. You see they care.
Yeah, they're committed.
Yeah, they're committed, yeah.
Absolutely.
So I want to have partners in my team that I'm sure they put a part of their soul in it, you know, like they must have fun. They must, I must see them suffer. I must see them tired. I must see them excited to know, okay, they are there. We are doing this together.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And I love that you started off with the integrity part, because most of the leadership comes from actions, not from words.
Mm-hmm.
And people are really seeing through when you don't do what you say. You know, having values that you don't live by as a person, it doesn't work. So this self-reflection is really interesting for me, because it took me a lot to realize it for myself. How do you recommend to, like, young entrepreneurs to look in their own, like, selves to find their strengths, when they're constantly looking into, like, what's the trend, what's the hype, what's the blockchain, Web 3.0, you know, like, they're looking out for opportunities, there's a new shiny thing, new programming language, new markets, etc. So you are basically saying something that doesn't need disruption, it's just there for you to understand better.
You kind of highlighted the, you know, the inner world and outer world. So we spend so much time in the outer world trying to see trends and achieve certain objectives.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize at some point, oh, wow, shit, there is this inner world that has some amazing capabilities, some things that society doesn't tell you about, like, I don't know, the telepathy and, like, feeling people energy and intuition. And you realize that's all there, and this human body might be the most advanced piece of technology that we have today on Earth. I was like, my mind was so captivated by this that I spent thousands of hours to introspect, to see, like, what's there, how are things functioning. And I recognize that people around me are just mirrors reflecting stuff that I am back to me. And this gives you a great opportunity to work on yourself, especially if you are like a person that likes personal development and invests in himself. You at some point you see it better than books, you know, like, okay, I've read hundreds of books, but when I discovered this inner world, it captivated me beyond anything that I would ever imagined. So basically, when I took like 2-3 years off to travel the world and discover myself, that's what I've done, you know, like, acknowledging how much time, how often we go on autopilot and we are not aware of our actions and we lose this self-awareness. So I worked a lot on this part. And what I do now in the mornings, I always reflect on myself, you know, like, I'm doing priming. I need to have a certain energy when I go out in the world. If I don't have it, then it means I'm not ready to go out in the world. I must have the rock star energy. You know, okay, let's do it. I can't be a leader if I'm unmotivated a day. And motivation is like showers. You have to take them daily. So, that's a secret of mine. Every morning, wake up at 5 or 5:30 and just have 2 hours for myself to think back of all the actions I did and interactions I had with people, what I told them, what they said, how did they react, what was their body language. Because you have to read between the lines. There's a big difference between what people say and how they feel. There's also a lesson that I learned by self-discovery, that, like, I can feel in myself, I can feel you and your actions and your emotions. And I see a lot of things happening sometimes, like, people are saying one thing and feeling a different one. So by analyzing this in the mornings, I realize, okay, this can be an ally, this can be a foe, careful here, careful there. So this is how I develop the strategy. Mm-hmm. And after I get through this, I'm doing priming so that, okay, I make sure I go past the disappointment and I'm again in my high energy state where I can motivate people, where I can talk with passion to investors. And yeah, I just keep going. Mm.
Have favorite saying here by Benjamin Franklin, early to bed, early to rise, makes mm-hmm. men healthy, wealthy, and wise. There is a second time you're saying about mornings, but this time you also included the priming effect. And would you please elaborate for the people what priming basically mm-hmm. is?
Yeah, I learned this on a seminar with Tony Robbins, Unleash the Power Within. So he was actually saying that we have to get in a certain state of mind or a certain state of emotion before we start doing things. I want to make sure that every morning when I leave my house, I'm in the energy of I can achieve anything. I'm unstoppable. You know, like I'm the champion sometime. I have the need of that energy. This keeps me going. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, you need priming when you are disappointed, when things don't seem to be working in the right direction, mm-hmm. you know. And that's when you need to get your shit together and get into this optimistic mindset where you convince yourself you can achieve anything. People can feel your energy. We are not really aware of how stuff happens, but we can feel each other's emotion. We can feel passion. We can, the older and wiser you get, the more you can feel people's energy. So, it's fundamental to have the proper energy when we talk and engage with people around us.
I just want to put two borders here. It's not self-inflicting like your confidence, but it's like basically preparing, getting prepared to be able to deliver on your highest potential during the day. Mm-hmm. Because of course people say, hey, but you're just talking to yourself things that you need to believe in. It's not it's not like that. It's just preparing, getting ready. And sometimes we just wake up in the morning, take coffee, and then we leave and we are totally not ready for the day.
Oh yeah, so I had days where I woke up and said, I wish this would be a dream. It can't be that bad. Really, so. Okay. And it was not like that.
And you're still confident. How do you keep this confidence? I mean, I'm able. I will achieve this. I'm going to find a solution to this challenge.
Well, I believe you can recover from anything. It just needs different periods. For some stuff, you need like 1 day. For others, you need like 2-3 weeks. Eventually, something will happen and you'll smile again. It might be not in the action you are pursuing right now, mm-hmm. maybe with this startup mm-hmm. or with that relationship, but opportunity will show itself mm-hmm. at some point. That's why it's really important to be aligned with your intuition. You have to get a glimpse or actually what's for you. Where's your road going? To be aligned, because so many times the ego wants success now, wants achievement now. So there is where this alignment comes from.
There's things that you just said, and I want to go back to them. The first one is, like you mentioned, the ego now, but a couple of sentences back, you were talking about what we should do. I mean, you were talking about your team as like a crew, as a ship, mm-hmm. as a family. Mm-hmm. And now you were talking about like mistakes, like your own failures and your own mistakes. Even like when you said that with the investors, with the advisors, you made a bad decision and then you took it in your chest. Like, so yeah. How do you control the ego so the success is always and the teamwork is always with the team and the failures are yours?
That's the way, you know, like when the leader has a mistake, no matter whose fault it is, he is fault for that. Mm-hmm. He should have checked. That's universal truth in business. No matter what goes wrong, it's my fault. Yeah. Everything that goes good is the success of my team. Yeah. So this is how leadership works. I guess this is the core of leadership.
I'm very mindful about fault, but I would use responsibility, ownership.
Yeah, love it.
Awesome. How do you pick the people in your team? Because you said you're sensible, you're using your intuition, you can feel the energy of the people that you're working with. But how do you hire, let's use the word, but basically recruit in your crew, in your pirate ship?
Yeah, well, the best ones are inspired by me. The best ones want to walk the road I walked. They want to become entrepreneurs. They want to have courage. They feel that I grow them. So these are the best types of employees that want to achieve something for them, for themselves, and they feel inspired by you. So if you can only hire from this sector, it would be the ideal employee to have the crew member. I don't call them employees because they are so... it doesn't reflect the proper value they're bringing. I think the companies of tomorrow will be all about associates. You know, like I rather call them associates. It resonates much better with me because when they care, that's when they do more. And when they do more, I consider them associates. You know, like even with our employees right now, we are considering option pools and equity and equity with Cliff. So we want to have them on the long run. We want to do this together.
So you want to make your thing like yours to be your thing, like everyone's. Yeah. Like that's
make committed. Everybody fall in love with your idea.
Awesome. And then is this question, when you hire these superstars that are inspired by your idea and what you do, how do you refrain yourself from fearing that they're going to just leave you in 1 year or 2 years and just go and do their own stuff? How do you live with this fear in mind that they're here for a couple of months, years, and then they leave and they'll do their own business?
There are some principles I learned during my experience as an entrepreneur. So people have the need to feel appreciated, the need of growth. They want to grow. If this year is worse than the last year, doesn't make me feel good. It's hard to live with that. So as long as they grow, they are progressing, as long as it's fun and they get the sense of meaningful, they will stay. There might have come exceptions where like they've fallen in love or they have a better opportunity. I was always happy to let people go when I knew they go for something better. I tend to think on long term, on creating alliances with people. You know, like I'm happy to leave you, to let you go. I'll be very respectful for what you have given and how you contributed. And I guess I hope sometimes in 10 or 20 years we're gonna meet again when you're grown up and you are maybe already at my level or even higher, and you remember the good partnership we had. So I guess if you wanna conquer the world, you have to build alliances. This was always the secret, and diplomacy and people skills, communication skills help you towards that direction.
Spectacular, love it. Andrei, you've founded Styler in Cluj, and we are here with Recursive, our regional media that's representing these nice local ecosystems as well. So why did you decide to go Cluj, not Bucharest? And can you take us a bit more into your thought process there?
Yeah, so I moved to Cluj 2 years before starting Styler. I said it's the only city in Romania I would live in. I didn't really like Bucharest, too crowded. And I didn't want to be, I came from a way smaller town, and I didn't want to be a small fish in a very big aquarium, you know, like I needed proper borders. So I was, I had the status I desired in Cluj to be able to make connections. I would have been way too small for Bucharest. So there's some upper classes there. So that's why I've chosen Cluj. And it was also aligning more to my values. After traveling so much, the people there are more respectful towards each other, are calm, and I felt good in it.
Yeah, perfect. What do you think about local ecosystems and how do they work together? Specifically on the Balkans, you are developing the market into Budapest and Istanbul, of course, but what about the other countries and regions?
So about the local ecosystem of entrepreneurs, it's getting better and better. Daniel Dinesh from YPAT inspired us all when he managed to go public, and like that was the moment I said, okay, I'm gonna go and start a startup and access risk capital to grow my business fast. I didn't think that was possible till then. I knew about the way from books, especially Peter Thiel, going from zero to one and some other books. So I said, okay, I think it's possible in Romania now, and I did it. It's quite hard for us as entrepreneur right now with inflation, war, and everything that's going on. But it's easier than the previous generation had it, and it's going. We are pivoting the way for the others that will come after us. Yeah. They're gonna have it way easier. Our success will bring more attention to the regional or local ecosystem of entrepreneurs. And that's what it needs to be done, you know, like everything we have in our lives is built on the ideas and successes of our ancestors. So we are just doing what others have done, contributing to the society, basically.
Awesome. Because you mentioned books and it's a favorite topic of mine, would you recommend another book apart from Zero to One by Peter Thiel that's business-wise, entrepreneurial-wise?
The best book I ever found and read multiple times at different stages in my life is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Basically, if you start off in Romania, you have a very bad idea on how to communicate. Being post-communist country, there's a lot of problems in our status quo when it comes to communication. So that book helped me a lot in my career.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a great book, and it just wraps up this entire conversation that started off as a business talk, but ended up being people matter, reflection in your own self and thoughts matter, and thinking along Livren about what you're giving back to the people matter. So it's a people's conversation. Andrei, thank you so much for this. And thank you for being on the Recursive Podcast today with us. I would wrap it up with a question that we kind of uses important highlight of the conversation. What would you like to be remembered for?
That's a good question. So my my objective here, it was like when I was young, I said, okay, I want to be immortal. I was around 15, 16 years. When I grew older, I said, oh, okay, there's only two ways to become immortal. You either, the technology appears and you become immortal, or you either do some massive contribution to society that they remember you forever, like so many other people as before us did it, you know? So I haven't really decided on the direction. I just decided I will contribute massively. Now I'm at the point where I'm doing some contribution to society, which will allow me to really achieve wealth, so that then I can look into myself to see, okay, what's the direction I want to contribute the most. So I have a glimpse. I believe that we are so much more than we are told. We have so many abilities inside of us that we lost. We got disconnected from nature, and humanity has lost the potential to access so many intrinsic abilities. So I might go towards that direction a bit, but yeah, let's see what I discover more on my journey. And yeah, that's kind of where I aim at.
One thing that I remember from our conversation is you defining the human body as the ultimate biotech biotech that we have in possession, and we don't know fully yet. So Andrei Orsacci, thank you for being on the Recursive Podcast. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Georgi, thanks for having me.
So guys, thank you for being with us today and see you next week on the Recursive Podcast.
In the next episode of the Recursive Podcast, we meet with Evelina Necula, co-founder and chief marketing officer at the edtech startup Kinderpedia.
We look at interactions. We look at how many teachers are able to schedule assignments easier, how many students are able to give in their assignments and to receive feedback in shorter loops, which is a very strong brick to the foundation of their learning. We are looking at how parents have better and more accessible, have a more accessible way to look at their children's progress and how this is building trust. So this is the first layer, the one which is visible on a short term. We can just take a snapshot and say, look, we have more than 25,000 teachers, and these teachers are giving this amount of homework and so on. When we look at the middle to long term, we look at how Kinderpedia can support, let's say, in the diminishing of functional illiteracy. Because by getting a better and more interactive communication, both between student and teacher and between teacher and parent, what we do is contextualize learning. We make it part of the community. It has been suspended in a limbo for far too long. And in order to become more relevant to students, especially to the digital natives which are in school today, we need to get this contextualization. And I believe technology helps a lot in doing that because it creates the bridges for students to ask questions, for teachers to reply, to enrich the context of education, for parents to also be on the loop and to be able to intervene and to support rather than to blame. And this is great. Also, we are in a country and in a region which is still struggling with school dropout.
And if you're just as passionate about innovation as we are, hit subscribe for the Recursive Podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. We're everywhere.